Hey, hockey heads, get ready for the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Each game day, answer four questions. Pick the winning team, guess if points will be over or under, predict the first goal, and choose the highest scoring period. Daily winners snag gift cards, while each round's champs pocket cold, hard cash. Play now at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess. It's fast, it's fun, and it's all about hockey. Let's go.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everybody, this is Jay Rosehill, and you're listening to Nasty Knuckles.
Listening to Nasty Knuckles, the Hockey Outlaws podcast, with your hosts, Derek Nasty Suttermeyer, and former Philadelphia Flyer enforcer, Riley Cote, as they go behind the scenes with your favorite NHL players. Time to face off.
All right, welcome back. What's happening, Nasty?
What's up, Regalia? I'm just on this ride with you, man.
Yeah? Did you just wake up? Or
I think I did. Oh, I didn't sleep much.
No?
Last night.
Rodeo?
No. Yeah. Rough well, one? Boys got a big win coming off a, you know, another 10 gamer.
Good for you.
Losing streak? No, I was on my own. I was on my own.
Oh, you were? But, yeah. Celebrating the big win.
The big win. I was there.
10-game losing streak.
Yeah.
There's a lot of excitement around the
third
city.
One in a year. Yeah. It's pretty – it sucks, but it's wild if you really think about it, having three 10-game losing streaks. But, you know, it is what it is, and they won a game last night.
Yeah.
And I was 100%. Happy about that. Scott Laughton came back.
Yeah.
That
trending
helps.
In the right direction.
Yeah, yeah.
So. Yeah. Yeah, it was tough since last week, just like that. You know, I think we were at seven games probably last week. And just like that, it was 10-game losing streak. So thank God they stopped the bleeding and it didn't go 11, 12, 15, 20. I mean, who knows where it could go. But yeah, getting lots back. Started off the game with a couple tillies, get the crowd into
that
it.
That was nice. That was nice to
little
see.
Little life, little spark.
Big Mac and D'Lo.
Yeah, props to the boys for showing up. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know how this thing's going to look, you know, game by game. But at least if they're, you know, competing like they are and getting a body or two back a week maybe or two every 2 weeks, you know, the trend in the right way. But
yeah, Baller and Debo said that it looks like they're going to be getting a couple guys back here in the next few days. So that will help for sure. You know, and they're competing. We've talked about that. Like, don't want to beat a dead horse here, but they are competing. They're staying in the games, but it's tough when you have a lot of manpower out.
Yeah.
So getting some bodies back, lots last night was good to see. I thought I didn't think he was going to be back already, but I'm glad.
Yeah, it was a lot sooner than I thought. Anyways.
So.
I think it was a godsend that it wasn't his head and it was his shoulder,
yeah,
obviously,
goodness,
right?
Because
yeah.
Originally I thought it was.
I think a lot
I
of people
he,
did.
You know, he hit his head. He's got a big melon. This guy wears a large helmet.
Yeah.
I always give him shit about that. Yeah, he used to put like double X on it.
Yeah, that big of a head.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't notice
he
had that big of a head.
He does. But I'm glad he's all right. I'm glad it wasn't anything to do with his head, for sure.
Yeah, so I guess, you know, we'll see. There's, four or five home games here coming up every other day, pretty much for the next week and a half. So,
yeah.
You're gonna, one by one, they're going to have to start trying to recapture these points and just staying in these games, keeping them low scoring, obviously. Can't be giving up these odd man rushes, two on ones that we've seen haunt them the last few games. But, yeah, I mean, yeah, stop the bleeding. Trend in the right direction. Get some healthy bodies back. Getting the saves.
Yes.
Then building outwards. I think that's all we can ask. And then we'll see where we go from there. We got a couple things going on here, Nast. The Philly show at Oaks Convention Center.
Yes. Yes, looking forward to it.
For all the collectors out there, jerseys, hockey cards, just sports fans in general.
Yeah, all
it's,
sports,
it's quite an amazing thing. Some current Flyers will be there, other current athletes, some retired athletes, and then us plugs will be lodged in the background there somewhere. We're not sure
We might be in the parking lot. We're not really sure, but no.
Playing that one by ear.
Yeah.
But we will be there.
Yes.
And hopefully you'll be awake.
I will be awake. Are you kidding me?
You know what's
going on.
I'm
always awake.
Yeah.
It's Friday to Sunday as well. Like we'll be there Sunday, but it does start on Friday. It's really cool. I've seen a lot of the stuff, if you check out their Instagram and all that, like, they have some really cool
items. Oh, for sure, yeah.
It's for a collector's dream if
exactly.
Trying to pick things up, so.
Yeah, no doubt. And then in the not-so-distant future.
Our good friend with Fans of Philly, Joe DiBiagio, has us going on a trip in February, and we're super pumped about it. Heading to Seattle, Sierra, buddy, Dave Haxtell.
Yeah,
and from there, we'll be going to Vancouver.
Ooh.
We've done some damage in Vancouver before.
Lugo and Roxy.
The Roxy?
Hopefully that place is still open. Hopefully it survived COVID.
Yeah, good point. I'm sure it did.
Yeah, I would think.
That's a staple.
If anything could survive COVID,
the Roxy
could definitely survive
I'm
COVID.
I'm sure it passed a few cases off if people were in there. But seriously, check out fansoffilly.com. It's awesome. Best sports travel agency around.
Oh, yeah.
It's not
looking
even
forward
close.
To that one.
These guys are great.
Oh, yeah. Lots of fun. And a couple other thanks to our sponsors. Here we go. We got Tovey, obviously, right? Been rocking the Tovey for some time. Check them out at ToveyHockey.com. Got some youth hockey sticks coming out,
the
Ravens. The
Raven.
Some different flexes for youth hockey players, as well as the obvious patented Tovey Airblade.
Yes, sir.
So check them out at ToveyHockey.com. And then a big thank you to our good friends at DLI Commercial. Britt, appreciate you. And getting into our presenting sponsor, Curaleaf. Welcome to Curaleaf, a medical marijuana dispensary. Whether you're a longtime patient or you're just getting acquainted with this incredible plant, Curaleaf of Pennsylvania is honored to guide you along your medical marijuana journey. Have questions? Google Curaleaf PA or stop by one of their 18 locations across the Commonwealth or visit curaleaf.com/locations. A big thank you. All right, Nast, episode 95 with Jay Rosehill. Rosie, ready to rock.
Let's do it,
Let's go. Welcome back. I'm Riley Cote.
And I'm Derek Sotomayor. And this week, we are so excited to have our good friend, former Flyer, former NHL enforcer, the host of the Leafs Morning Take, Mr. Jay Rosehill. What's up, Rose Daddy?
What's up, boys? Good to be on this damn thing. Love it.
Fucking great to have
you,
bro.
Yeah, man.
Wish we had you right here beside us, but we understand where you are, and it just can't happen that way.
Once the budgets start to blow up, we'll be flying around to each other. Don't worry.
There you go.
Bring you in studio 2.0.
How you doing, brother?
I'm good, dude. Just, just finished our show this morning. We kind of do a Leafs show here every morning, every weekday morning. So I've been doing that, kind of co-hosting with a dude, Nick Alberg, out of Toronto, and throwing it back to the TO days and all the mayhem that market is. So just finished that up and kind of got the day to myself. Otherwise, days off from my real job and just kind of grinding away. Going to hit the rink later on today and coach some U9s. So we got our shit pumped out of us here this weekend. So we need to go over some D-zone stuff today.
There you go. Your D-zone cover.
You might need to come help Elvis' team out with that. He's looking at 40-some shots a game. Well, that's what you get for being a goalie.
Yeah, right. You signed up. You're
supposed to stop it.
That's the way
she
goes.
Great. It is. That's great. You're coaching. I've been doing that too the last year and a half with Elvis. So it's been fun.
Yeah, it's good stuff, eh?
Yeah. How you liking the media gig? Do you get the itch to hop on the dark side, or how did that play out?
Yeah, I just kind of, you had Frank Saravalli on there the other day, and I saw him, but he's like my boss, I guess, and he just kind of It was Luke Shen, actually, who former Flyer and Maple Leaf, actually, was, I keep in touch with Lukey, and he was like, hey, would you ever want to do some, like, media for hockey? And I'm like, yeah, actually, I'm kind of looking for something on the side. I'm not totally fulfilling my time and energy here. I'd like to put it into something. So it was kind of in the back of my mind to figure something out. And then boom, Frank texts me and we start chatting, and I met our the host, Nick Alberga, and he's like, if you guys hit it off, that'd be great. And we just had a quick bullshit and easy going. So then it was like 2 weeks later, we're live on air. So happened quick, but it's, I don't know, it's fun, dude. I wasn't, you know, I'm at the fire hall and stuff. I'm a firefighter too. And guys are watching the game and, oh, we got to watch San Jose play Anaheim. And I'm like, who gives a fuck that happens in that game, right? Like, I couldn't care less. But you used to have your life on the line, Riles and Nass. Like, you guys know what it's like. Your whole day and your whole life is turned upside down by wins and losses and what that team's doing. Now I have zero input or zero cares. And then it's nice now to go into a show where I actually care about what the Maple Leafs are doing again. I remember all this stuff about the ups and downs and the criticisms and the back and forth that market gives you. So all of a sudden you're given a rip again about something, and I'm diving in and watching games, and it's fun because my boy just fell in love with the Leafs like a year ago out of the blue. Awesome. Just in love with Austin Matthews, Leafs everywhere. I'm like, dude, I didn't push this on him. He just went nuts with it all of a sudden. So he's loving it. We're watching games together. It's just, it's awesome. It's fun, but I do feel like I am on the dark side sometimes for sure.
Yeah. I feel you, because when I got out of coaching, I completely disconnected from hockey, didn't watch hockey at all. So then once we got back into this pod, I was forced to watch at least a little bit, at least the Flyers, you know, and cover them. But it was nice to at least have a reference point when you start talking to players and alumni, right? So they feel like you're actually engaged in the game. But
totally.
Once I stopped playing, it was like, you know, I could give two shits about anything that's going on, tell you the honest truth. But it's nice to get back. So happy that you're enjoying yourself there on the other side.
Yeah, sure. I think it's normal to get out of that and step away for a minute when you've been in it, especially coach. And like Jason LaBarbera, I talked to him, and he's I finished up playing with him basically, and then he got right into coaching, and he's like, coaching is insane, man. It's like way more stressful, and you actually have no control over anything, so it's like more frustrating. And I'm like, that sounds like a nightmare. He's like, I'm more stressed out now than when I was playing. I was like, that sounds awful, dude. But you can attest to that, Riles, jumping right into the American 100%. League as a coach. Like, geez, man.
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah, there is almost more pressure. And you really don't have a whole lot of control, right? I mean, you're only as good as the squad you're really given. And you do your best to kind of mold it and shape it. But, you know, you're replaceable, as you know, and if the team don't perform, it's like, see you later. And you deal with all that stress for no good reason, because you get fired anyways, you know. It's just like, it's pretty messed up. But yeah, he's in Calgary now, right, Barb?
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he was I think he started off with the Hitmen and then was goalie coach. I think he's associate now. And yeah, he's been moving up, and I don't see him. I think I can see him being a GM one day, to be honest, if he sticks
really,
it out.
Eh?
Yeah, he loves getting his fingers on everything and analyzing. But I don't think he likes being under Sutter's like thumb all the time. He said, like,
I'm sure,
fuck, if it's going, you know how it is in the locker room, if it's not going good. But in the coach's room, it's even more like someone, head coach walks in, Sutter walks in, and everyone like tightens up and shit if it's not going good. Like, fuck me, you got to leave that stuff behind. I can't stand. That's what I was happy about retiring, is no more of that garbage, right?
Yeah, exactly. I never saw the GM in Barb's, but I guess you know, I never picked his brain enough about it. But that's impressive, you know. But you know, he's done well for himself. He keeps climbing the ladder and finding new opportunities. So you know, the sky's the limit if you play your cards right and don't leave a trail of shit, piss people off.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a small world, the hockey world, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. But no, he's a good guy. I love Barbs. I guess he wrapped up in Lehigh. I guess that was your last year in the American League, and then you moved on to the UK.
Yeah, I guess it was he retired. His last year was with me, and then I played a couple more overseas. Yeah, but no, he lived in the same complex as me. We drove together every day, so we would bullshit with each other a little bit. And I once he got into coaching and started climbing the ladder, I could see him just getting his fingers wrapped around a team in some way, shape, or form. But we'll see. He hasn't done it yet. We're not going to pat him on the back too hard.
Yeah, right. No
That's
kidding.
That's awesome. What, Rosie, what's going on in TO right now? Things calmed down a little bit?
Yes, they have. Well, it never calms down. It's just, it's either,
yeah, that's a good point.
It's either on fire for this reason or it's on fire for that reason. It's nuts. But like, fuck, man. Like October, obviously, they stink it up, right? They have that terrible road trip to the West Coast and lose everything pretty much. And the sky was falling. Like I've been on Twitter for like 3 weeks, man. I stayed away from that when I was playing. And the only reason I got it is because of this job. I'm like, oh, I better get involved. And just instantly I just can't believe it. It's like, fire everybody. I told you Dubas was a bum and we got to get Keefe out of here. This is too much. We can't fucking tolerate this. And it's like, it's been a bad week, dude. A bad
week. Right.
Oh. And then they go off to the races all November, and now everyone's like, boys are rolling, this is the team. It's like, holy,
this is the team.
It's wild. It's a roller coaster, but like everything is under an absolute magnifying glass. So it's hilarious to step back and be like, man, but you can see that like the OG Twitter people who have been doing it forever are like a little more ahead of the curve, it seems like. And I don't know, I'm just dip my toe in and see what's up on that thing, but it's wild. And that market is wild. So it's actually fun to do a show on it because it's just nonstop craziness, right?
Yeah.
That's a place where you're always going to have people watching. Like you said, it can be good or bad.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody's right. Got something to say.
Totally.
That's so funny.
The sky is always falling.
Yeah.
In a smaller version of that, something similar in Philly here, right? I mean, obviously, we're not the Toronto Maple Leafs, but I think the way the Flyers started, everyone is, you know, trending in the right direction and everyone is feeling this vibe towards, you know, the Tortera and all this other stuff. And then just like that, you drop 10 and right back to square one.
It's weird because you'd think it would go the other way with them being a little scared of Torts and then kind of starting shit, and then he kind of figures it out, and then away they go and they have a ripper. But it was the opposite of that. And big win last night. I actually bet against them last night. I had my one segment on points bet and I was like, dude, I gotta go with the Islanders on this one. And there you go, they pulled themselves out of that ditch. But it was about time. Yeah. The reason why I was like, I didn't know they're gonna start off with two dust ups in the first,
yeah, game. Right. Yeah. Right away.
Right. Like, if I knew they were going old school Broad Street, I would have taken them, for fuck's sakes.
I know, right?
I, Rosie, I was at the game and I ran to get a drink real quick, and I'm like, I might miss the face off, right? I just hear ding, 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 like nothing, you know, where I'm like, what? I'm like, shit. So I had to watch it on TV. And by the time I paid, they've had the second dust up.
Oh, man.
I'm like, shit.
Classic.
I know.
You can't get in line and start the game.
No, ass, you know, dude, I thought I had time. I thought I had time.
He thought the seas would part for him and he'd walk right up to the front counter. He's napping, Billy, baby.
Hey, slide out of the
slide
way.
Slide out and ask, he needs a
hot
dog.
Oh, man. Yeah, you're right. They climbed out of it last night. But Rosie, they've had a, I'm sure you've seen some of it, but I know you're concentrated on Toronto, the Leafs. But, I mean, they have five of their top six forwards out. And, you know, you can't look away from that because it has a lot to do with them dropping 10 in a row, to be honest with you.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, it's tough to win in this league to begin with, and then you're, yeah, you know, you're down five guys, getting Lotz back.
He played last night. He'll Lotz will say it was, you know, he's back, so we're gonna get going again.
He's back. Yeah. He's back. The team's back.
Yeah, we got Lotz back.
You play with Lotz, right, Rosie?
Yeah, I did, man. He's it's funny because I like to see him as, I still see him as this like young 20s up and comer, right? And then they were talking about as like this veteran presence and shit. I was like, what the fuck? And I'm like, yeah, dude, he's been doing it for like a dozen years. It's nuts. Like, time is so fun. All of a sudden, that's these right. Guys, I think, are these young bucks or wily vets, and I'm hundreds of games played. I'm like, fuck, man, that's crazy. But yeah, you gotta change your mindset as these guys grow up, right? But he's done wicked. I love Lotz, man. What a good dude he is. And seems like everyone who played with him just likes his funny attitude and his little weird sense of humor, and his, he thinks he's kind of quiet, but he's actually a maniac. I just love that dude.
Yeah. And he's the only guy rocking a letter too. So he's kind of really stepped into a leadership role, as you're kind of alluding to, you know, these immature kids actually mature. Well, some of them do anyways. And he's one of them. He's doing well. You know, we see Lotz and keep in contact with him, but yeah, he's got that good energy, that good attitude. So served them well.
Yeah, that's good. That's good to see. And yeah, being that down that many guys on your roster, I mean, obviously that's a kick in the nuts. Like, what are you going to do? You can't control that, but you got to find ways to win with guys that come in, and obviously they've had trouble doing that. And I mean, you look at the Maple Leafs, they're down, their whole decor is decimated. Oh, they had both goalies go down. They're using their fourth string. They got 1, 2, and 3 hurt, and they're still all out of the blue, just picking off wins when they should be cratering. So it's just weird, man. You never know what's going to happen with chemistry and stuff like that. And obviously the Fly guys are having trouble finding it lately, but maybe they cracked the code last night. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, they played well. Carter Hart's had an unreal. Actually, Felix Sandstrom's played well also, yeah. But the goaltending's been really good and kept them in a lot of games. And they haven't been blowout games that they lost either. They were, you know, they're competing anyway, Rosie. It's a lot different atmosphere from what the guys are saying in the room and everything this year from the last couple.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah, you're not getting blown out. I mean, the morale is definitely different, but, you know, when you drop 10 games, it certainly still doesn't reflect well. You know, it doesn't matter what market you're in, it doesn't really look that good on paper.
It's not sexy.
It's definitely not sexy. Especially when things are trending right.
Cheer league, let alone National League.
Right. Just want to crawl into a hole, you know. Yeah. We'll see how it plays out. I mean, what were your thoughts on the hire, on the Tortorella hire? You weren't in Tampa's organization when he was there, were you?
Yeah, I was. I didn't really play for him. I am like black ace shit. I did some practices and stuff, but nothing like a season under him or anything, but like tons of camps. Like from the time I was drafted to I got traded to the Leafs, I was doing training camps with Torts, man, and he's intense, and he's old school, but I do think he's fair. And it's just like, when for some reason when he left Vancouver, I was like, that's it for Torts, like that's it, there's not a chance that old dinosaur is gonna get hired to coach these millennials and these Gen Z fucking kids these days. There's no way that would work, but he's managed to adapt well enough to stay in front of it and to keep a job and to keep relating to teams. And, you know, I didn't mind it. I like Tortorella and the Flyers together is kind of cool. You know, they like that intense style of play, and the town would like them. He was hoping that the players would respond to him. And then I think at the beginning of the year, this like promo video, but like his speech at the beginning of the year, and I was like fucking ready to run through a wall for him, you know. So,
yeah. You're back now.
Yeah. So that's probably why they had that hot start. Maybe he needs to go do one of those again, but maybe they're all just scared of him now. Who knows what happens? But I definitely think that style of coaching is, you know, he's one of the rare ones that's still kicking around, like the Keenans and that kind of thing, like see you later. And then now it's kind of more of that, you know, the Keefe and the John Cooper and those kind of guys who are, you know, don't rule through scare tactics or intimidation or any of that kind of thing. And I think these younger kids relate to that more, obviously, because they're such pussies, actually. But you know, they're a little softer generation, let's be honest, boys. I think our audience would agree. But no, you got to baby them a bit. I remember, Riles, you must remember when you were coaching the same team I was playing on, man. Like, you crack the whip on some guy who's just like literally not because he's in a slump, but because like he doesn't even show up. There's no effort. He doesn't have his give a fuck meter is at zero. And you crack the whip on him and say, hey, like, we got to be better. Like, we got to wake up. Time's ticking here. Let's go, baby. Like, you're better than this. I know you are. Let's go. And instead of being like, fuck, I know I got to wake up, they just go into a shell and sit on their phone in the corner. And I'm going to pout agent. Until someone asks me what's wrong. It's like, my God, man. Imagine dealing with that stuff now is a lot more difficult. I don't think those old school guys have any relate to that at all. So you got to bring in the players, coaches, I guess.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, the guys would cower pretty quickly. Just you said to go into a shell. I did hear Torts talking. I think it was on Spit and Chicklets, talking about how he's had to evolve, like as you're be forced to be able to stay in the league right now. But you know, being more of an open, you know, an open door kind of guy, where I think maybe in the back in the day it was still that old school. You don't really talk to the coach. You know, I think now you're talking about Keefe and some, you know, Cooper. It sounds like the communication is there, right? These coaches, like, absolutely communicate with their players. There's no, none of this, like, you know, hierarchy dictator type of setup. But it sounds like he's obviously evolved, right? I mean, you have to, it's necessary to play the game now, to be part of the game, coach the game now.
Yeah, I think so. They kind of like treat, like, I don't know, I've said before, like back in the day, they'd like scream and yell at you and bag skate you and threaten you to get you to like respond or whatever. And now that doesn't work. It's more like relate to you and care about you and invest, you know, emotionally or just treat you as a person instead of just a body. And that seems to work. I get it. And like some of the old schools, like Tim Hunter, you know, he used to be like, you know, you guys and your Red Bull, what do you need to get up for the game and all this shit? I'm like, you guys were smoking darts in between periods and leather skates that you hardly had to break stride. You know how hard it is to keep up to Connor McDavid? I think a Red Bull once in a fucking while is probably warranted.
Right. Good point.
I know. Yeah. And then also, like, why did you guys need to get screamed at all the time to be motivated? Why did you need to be threatened and screamed at? What was wrong with you guys that's what it took to motivate you? Why weren't you just already ready to rock is my question to those old guys. But nonetheless, I like a good balance of both. You can crack the whip and kind of, you know, relate to the boys. And I think the guys having the most success in the coaching industry are guys that kind of find that balance, I guess, is what I'm seeing and is what I would do if I had, you know, a team under me.
Right. Mm-hmm. Craig Berube is a good example.
Yeah, he's a perfect Chief. Hybrid. Yeah, perfect hybrid.
You know,
hybrid.
He played for Chief.
Yeah, he's wicked.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah.
He could have stuffed me in the lineup a few more times. I mean, come on.
Yeah, I know. We got to give him some shit about that. You're not kidding. I remember the one night Rosie's in and just to, you know, spray yourself down, get ready, the cold water. And I think you had just leaned back and Chief looks over and goes, "You like big tits?" You know, like, and Rosie's like taking his, and he like turns around and looks, and he's like, "Ah, yeah." It's right after the anthem, you know? He really does say that to you a lot.
Yeah.
We always say that, just kidding around, but.
I was golfing with him actually, and you know that Flyers, I think it's a charity thing at the beginning of the year, the golf outfit and at Trump. So we were playing, and I get paired up with Chief and we're playing and he's a pretty good golfer and we're playing some serious golf. And a couple days before we had just gotten there and Giroux threw a party up at his, on his penthouse with the pool and all this stuff. And all the wives were there and they were doing their thing and they decorated and stuff. And this was like the boys' first time of getting together and hanging out and getting to know each other. And like midnight rolls around and the wives are still like the center of the party and stuff. And we were getting after it, and I think we'd like sung a song because we had like a live band there. And then,
yeah,
like,
you were singing.
We were flying a little bit high, and then jumped in the pool. And then so Chief is taking his shot, and he's like, "Rosie," and he's looking at his ball, and he's waggling. He's like, "Heard a story about you the other day," and he goes, "At that party, jump in the pool, get up, and say, 'All right, ladies, it's time for you to get the fuck out of here.'"
Sounds about right.
Chief goes, "I love that shit," and then pulls the trigger.
I remember that. It was
so good.
All right, time he's to awesome. Leave. Yeah, he is a good golfer, that fucker.
Yeah.
Sweet mitts. I said, "Where were the middies on the ice?" He's like, he goes, "I was too busy. I was too busy slapping guys around," he says.
Fuck.
Oh man.
Who was one? We're talking about coaches. Like who would have been, you know, you say your best coach for you and your, you know, say in one of your, you know, best situations there?
Yeah, I really liked Dallas Eakins. When he was with the Marlies, man. He was just he's a guy you'd go through a wall for. He was super fair. He was honest. He gave a shit about every single guy, like totally personable, understands like the mental side of the game, which most coaches just completely forget as soon as they enter the coaching realm. And I just, he was just wicked, man. You just feel like you could approach him. You just felt like he supported you instead of you were always trying to prove something to him, you know, which was new for me. And I appreciated that. And he like played me more minutes and said, "You can play, you just haven't had the chance." And that was nice to see. And, you know, what stands out is John or Peter Laviolette too. Like when I got traded to Philly, and then he played me every single game when I was there after that lockout. And then I signed a 2-year extension with them, and he came up and he's like, dude, I'm pumped. I can't wait to have you in. He goes, I can't promise you 15 minutes every night, but you're going to be in every single night. It's not going to be like Toronto where you're in one, you're scratched one, you play two, you scratch three, one, three, fuck. He's like, that's brutal, man. He goes, our boys want you in the lineup. I want you in the lineup, and you're going to be in there every night. So I'm glad you're here, man. And I was like, oh my God, this is what I've wanted. So I went and had a huge summer and trained good and came into camp in shape. And then over that summer, they just went and just lost her in the first three games. They can him. They just can Laviolette the first three games in. And I was like, what? Like, is the second fucking fastest
Can you tell Chief what you told me, Lavi? So, yeah.
So he was like, well, yeah. I was like, who are we hiring? It's going to be some maniac. And then it's Chief. And I was like, oh, thank God. And then Chief's just like, yeah, I don't know, whatever. I didn't get anything I wanted. But I love Chief. I wish he played me more. But I was ready to play like 65 games that year and like really take it up to the next level. And unfortunately, it didn't happen. Mr. Snyder was not patient at the beginning of that season. He wanted one bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, the opposite that happened to me with Lavi. When once John Stevens got fired, Lavi came in. He had no use for me.
Oh, shit. Isn't that funny?
You warmed up, though.
I led the league in warm-ups for sure.
Yeah.
He definitely loved me for that. But, yeah, interesting dynamic. Yeah, it's tough. Yeah, that's tough for sure. But
led the league in hungover warm-ups.
Yeah.
That's true. Man. You sweat it out.
You sweat it out.
You sweat it out in the morning, actually. You get bagged if you're not going. Little bagger.
Right? Oh, you're bagger. Used to love looking at that Zamboni driver as you're just leaned over your stick and there's no one coming on after you and it's a nightmare and you're looking at him and you're like, come on, baby, come on, baby. And he's like, I got a couple, I think it was MSG one day. Some guy's like, all right, he pulls up and starts opening the gates. I'm like, we're done, Timmy Hunter. We're done, bud. Looks like we're done. Oh, and he just give it to me twice as bad next game.
Oh man.
That's funny.
Did you enjoy some of those skates, or is it always miserable?
No, I hated them, man. It was just you never knew how bad it was gonna be, right? Like, it depends who your assistant coaches are, man. Sometimes they just take their frustration out on you, and other times they're like, hey, let's do you know, like Kinger would play that game, where we'd flip the nets at the blue lines, or I think at the top of the circles, you'd flip them upside down and you got to play 3-on-3 and you got to just hit the mesh, like no iron. Yeah. And we play that for like 45 minutes. And I mean, we're dying. Our legs are burning. We are soaked in sweat. And I would look forward to that because we'd be chirping off and like, fuck no, I'm not changing teams. We're keeping the way it was yesterday and blah, blah, blah. And away you go and you make it fun of it. And then Tim Hunter would just go wallies back and forth until I puke.
Wallies. Again.
He told me we're going up to 10 one time. Back and forth, back and forth. Back and forth is one. Back and forth, back and forth, two. Back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, three. Up to 10. And he's like, I'll do them with you. And then I think he got up to like 6 or 7 and then quit. And then I get to 10 and I'm like, oh my God, that was a bagger. And then he goes, all right, like, what are you waiting for? Back down and back down. And then
back down.
I puked in the bench and I was like emptying water bottles, trying to get the puke out of the bench for the boys. And then I get called in the afternoon and I got to play that night.
Always
happens. That happened.
Beautiful. It happened.
Yeah. Oh man. I guess life I was lucky of all the pass games that I was able to play. When it was scratched, I actually looked forward to the two pass, and I almost forgot that I was actually in the NHL. But I was just getting paid to play two pass.
Yeah,
it was such a fun experience for me. Playing two pass and assisting coaches. Man,
it's funny you say, Rosie, you're waiting on the Zamboni, because I used to like go out and tell Joey Mall, like, look, I'm like, watch. I'm like, bro, I want to go eat. Like, you guys have been out there an hour, man. Like, let's go.
Joey loved the two pass.
Hey, that's what I mean. He just wanted to play. He just wanted to play. He didn't want to get off.
Kato. Well, dude, those guys like Kinger and Malzy could they would play as one of the dudes against, you know, three NHLers, and there was no slack in there in them at all. They'd win sometimes. You couldn't get it from him. You're trying not to like slew foot him and dump him on his head and stuff a little bit, but like, man, those guys were keeping up with like NHL players. It was wicked. Those guys don't skip a beat, but they had pretty good careers too, I guess.
Yeah, not bad.
Yeah, Joey wasn't bad around the net.
No, he was pretty good.
He was good at conserving his energy, right? Not going like all the way in the corner, but kind of just like staying inside the dots. The puck always kind of found him, and he definitely had some finish, which I did not.
You did once.
Once, yeah, I did once. Yeah, yeah. What do you got, Nest?
I was going to ask Rosie. It's funny. Someone asked Riles this a couple weeks ago. They send in questions, and you're probably gonna say everyone, but like I was gonna ask you, who do you think was the toughest guy you fought?
Riley Cote, obviously.
Yeah, good answer. Right, I was hoping you were gonna say that.
Forgot you guys.
No, dude. I mean, yeah, you get asked that a lot by guys, and you know, like a Brian McGrattan comes to mind, I guess, but. You know, Colton Orr and I don't know, like Wes Garth, not even him. It's just, it doesn't matter, man. On any night, as you guys know, any guy can get the best of you. And it doesn't, like, when you go up against those real big guys, it's like, I got nothing to lose, right? So you just go in there and whatever. But I found the toughest guys were like in the minor leagues who, you know, were more mutants than anyone you'd see in the show, and like maybe don't skate as good, and that's why they can't get up to the big league, but they live to fight, and they're these maniac monsters with that don't feel any pain or probably all roided out. And you fight those guys and it's like, good Lord, like they just have no quitting. And doesn't matter what happens, they want to go again next shift, and you're like, what?
Yeah, as soon as you get out, right?
Yeah. But I always thought, like you know, like a Michael Haley, like guy like that, who's like, he's tiny, he looks short and he looks thin, but he's not, he's a strong prick. And like a guy like me, who's taller, I fight him, and it looks like, oh, so say you get the best of him, it's like, well, you should have looked at the size of him. And say you have getting a draw, which is the most likely, it's like, what the hell happened there? And heaven forbid you lose to the guy, and everyone's like, are you fucking kidding me? But those guys are so wiry, so strong, they feel no pain, and they throw so freaking hard that a lot of those like middleweights, but they're actual like heavy guys in the American League, were always like, man, these guys, you look bad no matter what happens, and they're tough as freaking nails. I always hated fighting those guys. I'd rather fight like a 6'7" guy, so that no matter what happens, right. It'll be good.
Yeah. No, for sure. I agree with that fully. I mean, you know, you say Michael Haley, I think like a guy like Aaron Asham comes to mind too. And it kind of in that category of smaller, stockier, you know, good fighter, good strategic fighter. But yeah, I know it's definitely, you fight the big dogs. There is nothing to lose. It's like, if you sneak one out, you sneak a lucky one in there, like you look like the champ, you know?
Yeah, totally.
So it's always better fighting guys way out of your weight class.
Yeah, totally.
Sorry for the quick break. Just a quick shout out to our sponsor, DLI Commercial, a premier commercial construction and building maintenance company offering support at every phase. Thank you for your support. Check them out at DLI Commercial for all your construction needs. Back to the show.
Yeah, I remember us going into TO, and you ended up, because you played with Colton Orr, obviously. You guys were teammates and buddies, and you ended up fighting him, and I'd say you got the better of him. Actually, I've heard him say that. And then was that tough, like, fighting a buddy? Like, or is it just it's game time and it is what it is?
It was, because like Orzy was good to me, and you know, we roomed on the road, and I didn't know what it would be like when I made that team, if I would be stepping on his toes or what, but he didn't have an inkling of that. He just, what's up, buddy, what's going on today, and here's what's happening, and what do you think about this guy, and hey, can you yank me around after practice, I want to see how my shoulder's feeling or whatever. Just like, we were kind of like a 1-2 shot, and he kind of made it easy for me to get into that locker room and that league and whatnot, where if I feel like I'm tiptoeing around the heavy on the team, that makes it even harder to crack the season and start your career and all that stuff. So he was really good about that with me. And then, you know, it was my first game for the Flyers, was in Toronto against Toronto, and Orzy had some head problems. Like, he'd had a few concussions and wasn't feeling his best. So I didn't, didn't know if we'd be going or not, but knew that he sure as hell wouldn't hesitate and wasn't sure what his attitude towards me would be. But I kind of pinched down on the wall a little bit and he was coming out and he didn't end up touching the puck. So I kind of didn't get him, but like could have clipped him, but didn't because he didn't touch the puck. But I was ready to hit him, had that breakout pass gone to him, and I didn't. And then when I stopped to go back, he was right there with his shit off, like didn't hesitate, like you were gonna run me, you almost ran me, and away we went. But I don't know, I don't think he liked it, because afterwards he was pissed off, like F you a little bit and this and that, and I thought we'd do the old attaboy Orzy, attaboy Rosie, attaboy Orzy, that shit, and he wasn't into it very much. And then afterwards he was like, oh, I was just caught up in it all and whatever, and you know, he was still the dude in Toronto. And yeah, I didn't know if we'd go or not, but we ended up going and it was good. But it is definitely a little bit weird, but in the heat of the moment it's fucking survive, right?
Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah, that actually makes me think of something else. You ever have any interesting convos with a guy you fought once you get in the box? Anything funny or anything like nuts? Because you seemed like you fought a lot, obviously, but you stayed. I mean, without, of course, you'd be like, "Let's go, look at the bench" or something like that. But you were pretty reserved as far as, you know, you didn't ever seem like you were like crazily pissed off or anything like that. Of course, I didn't see every single fight of your career, but anyway, yeah. Do you ever have anything funny happen in the box once you got there?
Well, yeah, I was never doing the belt or F you and guys are getting too crazy. I said, you know, if anyone wants to go, I'm here, let's go. And we'll see how she goes. And I'm just here to fire up the boys in my bench. I could give a shit about you and whatever. But, I remember early trying to make the Leafs. I think it was still preseason. And, Brad May was trying to make the Red Wings. So we're at Joe Louis, and he had just gotten like a PTO signed, and it was kind of like in the middle of preseason. So he's out there and I'm trying to make the team, and he's just like, who knows how much he was skating or whatever. And I was like, Mayday, Mayday, like, can I have one? And he's like, yeah, second period though, got to get my legs under me, second period. I was like, hey, no worries. So second period comes, and I go up, Mayday, Mayday, like, I need to get one here. And he's like, yeah, one more shift. I got to ease into it. I got to get a sweat on. he's like, absolutely, baby, absolutely. One more shift. He keeps saying that. I'm like, okay, like, I don't want to like disrespect you and ask you again, but like, you promised.
You promised me.
So then we scrap, and it's a good fight, spirited, and we both go down and we pop up, and I was like, thanks, Mayday. And he was like more jacked, and he was like, yeah, and he's banging my helmet. He's like, you keep playing that way, Rosie, you're gonna make that fucking team. And I was like, whoa! And then in the penalty box the whole time he's like, I love it, buddy, I love what you're doing, you're gonna make that squad, keep doing what you're doing. And I was just like, oh my god, it was so that's sick.
Awesome. That's awesome. So in the world, yeah.
He's the man.
How old is he? Have been like close to 40 or what?
Is good question, man. 40? If I'm like 24, he would have been pushing 40 to be fighting the young guys coming out. Good for him, man. Unbelievable. And then he went Battle of the Blades that year, and I was in Toronto, and I went to watch him. He asked if I wanted some tickets, and then we had beers in the dressing room after, and he's like, he's just the nicest dude in the world. He's such a beauty. So I like that story, because he's you know, you watched him fight like the big boys coming up, like back in the day. So it was pretty cool to cross paths with him.
Yeah, no doubt, he's legendary. That's a great story. Well, see that excitement. I can't imagine still awesome. Being fighting in the NHL, being that excited about it. 40 years old. I mean, how much money am I getting paid? Fuck.
He just has to get his legs underneath him.
He's got to get his legs underneath him. Yeah, man.
Or he wanted to get
a lot more warm up as he gets older.
Yeah, it's like he didn't even skate all summer, and it was his first summer skate, and he's like, give me a couple more.
Chips. You know, it's funny. My first year, I was in Florida, and I took care of the visiting teams, and Buffalo was in town, and Jim Pizzatelli was their medical guy for a long time, and he used to make robes for the tough guys.
Oh,
he
loved all the tough
guys, and this guy, he's a beauty, man, and he was really good to me, so he never went back to the hotel, so we're there, and obviously they got Ray, and they got May, and I don't know who else. That was my first
Barnaby,
26 years ago. And he's like, who do you guys got down there? And I'm like, oh, you know, Paul Laws has been fighting a lot. He's pretty, you know, he's doing well, like whatever. And he's like, oh, you think you can take Brad May? And I'm like, Man, I don't know. Like, I don't know, Brad. I don't really know who he is yet. Like, you know, it's my first year and I've been in college. I obviously knew who he was, but
sure.
Anyway, so long story short, all the boys come in and they're getting ready for the game. And he calls me in the medical room and Ray and Rob Ray and May are standing there. And he's like, hey, Sudsy. They call me Sudsy because of my dad.
Yeah.
He's like, Suds, who'd you say could beat up Brad May? And I was like, what? And he's like, he's standing right there, right? I'm like, what do you mean? And he goes, well, you said earlier, who number three lost down there? And I'm like, yeah, I mean, he's like, and Brad May's looking at me. He goes, did you say that? And I'm like, I did. And he started dying laughing. He's like, all right, it's cool, man. He goes, I don't want to fight that big motherfucker. He goes, I'll go with someone else.
You go back but to I'm your like, go back to your locker room and like, I might have gotten you in some trouble.
I was like, oh man, I wasn't even trying. He was like, pizza's like Don King, man. He was just trying to get all these fucking tilts going, man.
Oh man, that's hilarious. This wasn't Peter Worrell, wasn't there?
No shit.
Guys keep getting bigger. Oh man, that is priceless.
Wait, quickly, Rosie, you played 1 year of college.
Yeah.
And when you played junior before that, like, were you mixing it up? Because I saw your PIMS. You had like 200 the first year. And were you mixing it up?
Yeah, here and there. Like, I got listed with Seattle in the dub and didn't want to go to Seattle. Was just not mature or ready enough to leave my hometown and my small town and all that shit. I was like, are you kidding me? Seattle of all places. So was kind of freaked out. And then I was like, you know, I was kind of a late bloomer and I had gotten drafted but was playing midget trip and had this, you know, some interest in the dub and everything. And I was like, man, I'm kind of late bloomer here. I don't want to get thrown to the wolves in the dub and then be toast. So I'm like, maybe I'll stay home, play tier two, play junior A, and then go to college and have time to actually get better so that I can hopefully make the show. And I was a defenseman at the time. And so then played tier two junior. And we had such a tough team back then. We probably had 6-7 guys that were not scared of much at all. And we didn't have a designated guy, but it was just, if anyone wants it, there's lots of guys that are willing. So you'd get into a handful a year for sure. Like, I don't know, maybe you're on the 10, 7 to 12 mark, something like that in a year, that many scraps. And then kind of the same thing all going through until I switched to forward. And that's when like the 25, 35 fights a year started to come. It was like, I just went haywire playing forward and you just chase guys down and chase your own dumps and hit the D-man and get in the goalie's face. And they just started coming for you, right? There's no stopping. We're on the D-man and you kind of, you know, ride a guy into the corner and bury him and then get back to the front of the net. It doesn't look as aggressive for a guy to come and grab you as just chasing your dump like a meathead and burying him.
Totally.
Talk out there, you know?
Yeah, straight lines, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. I was asking because then you go to college, right? And you obviously can't fight in college, so... I just thought that was wild. And you had to go to a cage too, I would imagine, or a bubble.
Yeah, I went to a cage too, which was weird. You got used to it in a couple of skates though, but everyone's acting pretty tough in the NCAA leagues and whatever. But I mean, I think I led the country in penalty minutes that year and I didn't even fight. It was just like, it was incredible. They'd get a breakout pass on the wall and they'd just go one hand on their stick and just skate as fast as they could with the puck on their stick with their head down. And as a D-man, I just pivot and go right against the grain up right around beside the penalty box at the red line. Just boom, you just crush these guys. And they're just like, they cannot believe what just happened to them. Like they've never been hit like that before. And I remember that everyone would wear their cage loose because it was cool when it would rattle around and you'd hit guys and I'd blow up guys' chins. There was blood always coming down guys' necks because their chin and you'd blow them up because they never got hit and they never picked up their head. And I would take charging, after roughing, after elbowing, take 6-8 penalty minutes at night, but guys were just dead and they'd never played that kind of hockey. And Scott Sandlin, who was there, was just like, I do not care how many of those we have to kill, keep doing it. And really, I just,
yeah, that's the best then, ones. Yeah.
Yeah. After a year, you know, like Tampa won the cup that year before and they had drafted me already and they wanted to get all their D-men that they had drafted into their system because they had this secret defensive system, even though the lockout had just happened and everything had changed. So it kind of blew up in their face, but, after that 1 year of college, they're like, I hated going to school, man. It was like, I just hated the school part of it. Like actually trying to get a degree while you're trying to focus on hockey. And that was kind of difficult. So when they came and offered me a contract and said, hey, we'd kind of like to get you playing pro. You're more that style. We love that you went there and had a year of development and we think you got better, but like, you know, 4 years wasn't even an option. And then all of a sudden 2 years wasn't. So I just took off and signed and started that journey. I knew I could always finish school if I wanted, but there wasn't going to be NHL contracts on my doorstep for very long and very often. So just took it and ran. And yeah, everyone that looks back, they're like, you played college? It's kind of a head twister. But yeah, I used to be a defenseman and the rest is history, I guess. Yeah.
That's awesome. Pretty wild. And then to be drafted out of the Alberta League, I mean, Junior A is say pretty impressive, right? Going into that draft, did you know that you were going to get drafted? Obviously, you'd been talking to some teams.
Yeah, I remember, I don't know, I was pissed off at Seattle because when I told them that I wasn't going to come and I wanted to play Tier 2, the guy like lost it on me and had me in like tears and everything. And he's like, you come here, you could get drafted. You may not even get a scholarship, let alone freaking get drafted. And you think you're going to do that? That's the end of your hockey career. And what are you doing and all this stuff? And like they had called me earlier and been like, how tall is your mom? What's your dad's shoe size and all this shit? Just trying to see how like big I'll get. And I'm like, I'm just such a piece of meat to you, man. So I always had this chip on my shoulder, like F you, right? Like I'll show you. And then I was just on Central Scouting's list when I was in school and my buddy who like has the hockey news and shit's like, Rosie. And he had like the newspaper, the hockey news, the magazine, and my name was on it on Central Scouting's North American skaters list. And I was like, and my heart dropped. I was like, oh my God, like that was my first any interaction with the NHL at all. And like, that was the goal. That was the dream. That was everything. And then to see, you know, that article with the NHL logo in it and then your name in print was just like, here we fucking go. So then I was just totally like, let's make this happen. And just went balls to the walls in that league. And yeah, I got drafted and got a scholarship that first year. So I was happy because I had a little chip on my shoulder from, you know, those guys thinking I had to play in the dub or I'd be toast or whatever. So it's kind of cool to prove them wrong in that sense. But yeah, I was a big proponent of like, if you're good enough, they'll find you. There's scouts everywhere, man. They're going to.
Oh, yeah.
So.
No, that's amazing. Yeah, super unconventional. I didn't, I didn't realize that until looking through, through some of your history and backstory. And then I did know that you played a year of college, but it's pretty inspiring. You know, you think about that, right? It's like, but you need that chip on your shoulder, right? I mean, I think that's important to have that. Otherwise, you know, you just become complacent, I guess, right?
Yeah, like it's funny talking to like coaches at the rink nowadays with like my 6-year-old, more so my 9-year-old and whatnot. And they're like, man, this my kid, he's just got to do this and he's got to do that and he's got to get better at this. And I'm like, and then I watch the kid and he's just like looking in the stands and like just wants to hang out with his buddies. And I'm like, you're not gonna like practice that into him. He has to have the drive. And that's the bottom line. Like it does not matter what you got going or what you wish for your kid or how much skill you have. If you don't have that drive where like, I need to make it like head down, ass up, I'm not going to stop until it happens. If you don't have that, you just don't make it, man. And I mean, how many guys do we know coming through the ranks and everything who look like superstars and their parents were already freaking, you know, touting them as this and that. And they went absolutely nowhere. And it's got to come from within. And you know, these parents that are all jacked up these days at minor hockey level, that's kind of some of their thing. They're like, man, he doesn't have that drive. He doesn't have that. I'm like, well, you can't teach that. So just, you know, it's up to him. Like, I don't know what to tell you. You can't teach that. It's got to come from an individual inside.
Rosie, I hear exactly what you're saying. Elvis is his second year might. And we go to games and there are parents that think their 8-year-old's going to get drafted next summer. Like, I really believe that they think that, like, at the age of 8, you know, I'm like, sometimes I have to, like, tell myself, man, Elvis just turned 8. Like, I'm, like, mad about something he did, you know, not mad, but, you know, you're like, he should have done that one. But I'm like, dude, he's 8 years old, man. Like, he's having fun, right? Like, so you always have to remember that.
Totally.
Yeah.
But it's wild at the rinks, man. I've seen some shit in the last year and a half that I can't even explain.
I know, dude. We're talking about 9-year-olds. Imagine when you get to 14 years old and they actually have like a CHL draft and stuff. I'm scared of it, man. I don't want anything to do with it. These parents are lunatics, dude. It's all about them. It's not about their kid. It's like, I always want to say, who wants this more, you or him, you know?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
And I know the answer every time, so I don't know. I just try. My thing is, as far as you want to go, I'll go with you, but it's going to come from you. It's not going to be because I push you. You got any questions, you want to work on something, I'm there. But don't expect me to be the one that helps you make it somewhere. It's got to come from within, right? And that's it for me. And those, I just don't see that a lot at the rink, and it makes me want to stay away as much as possible because it's crazy town in there.
It is, yeah, man.
It is highly toxic for sure. But that ingredient you're talking about obviously is the most important ingredient, and it can't be taught. Like, you can do all the skill work and all, you see all this, you know, the flashiest sticks, you can be the best skater, all this stuff, but you know, that ingredient is it, right? And like, to your point there, Rosie, it's like, you're there as a support system for your son, but like, it has to come from within. Like, you can't do it for him. It doesn't matter how many connections you have in the hockey world, right? I mean, it's like, you still have to go out there and perform. But I think we lose sight of that, you know, especially like parents that have never like played at a high level, and they, you know, they see their kid maybe being like better in their age. I just feel like at some point that caps out, and then you have to have that special ingredient. Otherwise, it's just skill work. It's just like, you're showing up at the rink and paying a lot of money, but you're wasting probably both people's time. I mean, the parents' time and the children's time. But
And you've seen it where like guys are super skilled, but they don't have that, so they can make it to the American League or something, but like, their attitude's not great, probably because their parents were idiots in the way they raised him and everything they told him his whole life, and they struggle and ultimately don't make it. And then a guy with less skill, maybe, who has that heart and who has that drive, all of a sudden becomes like, you know, an 800 game NHL player, because, you know, that's just, that mixed with a bit of skill is like, see you later. But that ingredient is like the most important, you know, and you can still make it without all the tools in the toolbox if you have that, because like, coaches and GMs and scouts just gravitate towards that shit, right? And you want that on your team, and it's just so much more important. But there's not a box on the score sheet for that, but it's kind of just an unsaid thing.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you're that guy, I was that guy, and how many guys did we see, you know, that had way more skill than us that never found their way? And it was just like, you have all the skill, you have all the same resources we have. It's just that the X factor, I guess, right? It's like it's the spirit of the individual that, you know, you got to dig deep, right? I mean, you can only serve it on a silver platter so much, and then the guys actually got to bite into it. But it's something that needs to be talked about more at the youth level, because I think you say USA Hockey is probably much similar to Hockey Canada, where it's just like so high skill now, so high skill. I'm not sure how you teach that ingredient. You know, it's almost like it needs to come from some sort of struggle, right? It's like, yeah, they're kind of, to your point, you had a coach tell you'll never make it, you're never going to get drafted, you're not, you barely get a scholarship out of that. You know what I mean? You need to have some sort of, I don't know, friction, you know, or grow up in poverty and, you know, have nothing. And then, you know, I mean, you need to grow out of it. It's almost like it needs to come from some sort of struggle almost, right? To have that.
Yeah. It's like your attitude, right? Your attitude towards like adversity. Like, you go through adversity with the right attitude, all of a sudden you come out of it better on the other side, and now all of a sudden you have character because of it. Or if you have the wrong attitude, you go through adversity, all of a sudden it's poor me and hang my head and I lose confidence and I want to point my finger at everything around me, and then good luck in this business, you know, with that attitude, because you're going to go through so much shit. I do not care who you are. Connor McDavid has gone through more shit than anyone would even know, and look how good he is and how much drive and desire. Like, it's, everyone's going to go through shit, and how do you respond, and what's your attitude during that? And that's where that desire comes from. It's like, put the blinders on. I do not care what any of this is. I'm just going forward. I'm trying to get better. I'm just moving on. I'm just going to do everything that's asked of me. I mean, that's all anyone can ask, I guess. And I mean, like I said, you put that attitude on a guy with tons of skill, man. Ooh. And it's weird, because it's free. It's, everyone's got it in them. I don't have the ability to like dangle like Claude Giroux with that speed. I just don't have it. I can't even access it where anyone can just work their nuts off. Anyone can go through a wall. Anyone can be a good teammate. Anyone can do all that stuff and then just have that drive. And so many guys just choose not to. And it's like, man, you're making it pretty hard on yourself by not adding that to your Rolodex, you know?
Right. No kidding. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. It's almost like as a parent, like putting your child, setting your child up almost for failure, putting them through, you know, calculated adversity, if you will, right? Where yeah. you'll learn pretty quickly how they respond, and then maybe you tee it up again, you know, tee it up again. But if it's too easy, right, and if they're just fully rolling on skill, and there is no adversity, like when there is adversity, it's like, how does that play out, you know, especially as you get older? So it's almost like you almost have to put them in environments to fail or make it really hard on them, have that adversity and that friction, and then see, you know, you either cut out for it or you're not, my opinion anyways.
Totally.
So talking about drive and everything, I have to ask Rosie before I forget. You played with Phil the Thrill and T.O. Back me. What? That's baloney. he just I don't know how many games is he at now, Baller? Well, he's over 1,000, but did you see that happening, Rosie?
No, I didn't, man. Not with that body.
Not with that bod pod. Oh, man.
He's a
no
freak
way,
in nature, though.
A milk bag on two pipe cleaners is never gonna get injured. I don't get it, man. That guy's a freak.
I've known Phil a long time. I had him with USA Hockey right when he came out of college there, and I've kept in touch with him, and obviously we'd see him all the time, and he just makes me laugh, like just the shit that comes out of his mouth. But Lukey was telling us, Shen was telling us, when they were doing at the beginning of the year, doing all the testing, like he would kill it. He'd come in there in flip flops. Like I think he told us that he was in there in flip flops and did the squats and like beat everyone or whatever, however it was. And he's like, I'm done, and walks out. You know?
I'm done.
And Randy Carlisle was always giving it to him too.
Oh, I'm sure.
He was always so mad. He'd drag his feet around in his flip flops and his hoodie, like he was always freezing. He's like, fuck me. He was just always bitching. Everything was wrong. Oh God. But he'd just go turn on the Jets, and away he went, man. He was
right. It's a high amazing. Level performer, man. Yeah.
You can't.
That's it comes out to how many, like 10 years straight without missing a game, like 11 years. Like,
and points. That's,
and it, points. It's incredible.
I don't think that'll ever be broken, will it?
No, like, there's no chance. Like,
I don't think so. It's amazing. Even Yans, like Yans made it that long too. Like, it's crazy. Yeah. But Yans is at least in shape. In better shape. I shouldn't say the guy's not in shape because he's performed for how many years, man.
Like, it's.
He just makes me laugh. I love that guy.
Yeah, good for him, dude. He's just.
Yeah, I had to ask you though. I could just hear him talking.
Priceless story.
Oh man.
Well, Rosie, we appreciate you. I know you got to get rocking and take care of some stuff around home there, and we appreciate you just carving out the time for us. Awesome.
Hey, it's a pleasure, boys. Let's not make it the last time. It's fun, and like what you guys are doing. I follow you and see what's going on in Fly Guy Land. It's nice that you guys are doing it. I love to see your faces.
Yeah, man, you're doing a great job as well, bro. I'm happy. This is something you could do. We were talking about this earlier. Like you communicate well and you know the game, so it's awesome. And hopefully, we'll be joining you soon. That's come later though. We'll tell you about that.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. 100%. If you're ever in this neck of the woods too, you get the travel budget squared away, and you're flying around, and let us know. Love to have you in the studio here.
Trust me, that'll be on the bucket list for sure. We'll make it happen.
All beautiful. Right, brother.
All right, Rosie. Appreciate you.
All right, dudes. Thank you, guys. Good luck with everything. Care. Thanks for having me.
All right, a big thank you to our boy, Jay Rosehill. Rosie, what a funny dude, eh?
Oh, dude, tough as nails, too, man. He was tough.
Yeah, he had
great guy.
Me in tears.
Great locker room guy. Yeah. He was great on the bench, man. You know, that's tough. Like, you went through it. Like, I was watching some of his fights, and there was one where he, I think it's when he fought Orr, and he ended up having to fight another absolute monster, and they're like, he had had a minute 30 of ice time. I mean, like, how tough, like, you had to do the same thing sometimes. Yeah. Like, I can't even imagine, but great guy, great team guy. He was awesome to have. I really liked him a lot.
Yeah, I liked Rosie. Obviously had a battle with him, and then I had an opportunity to coach him when he was down in Lehigh, so got to know him on a personal level, and yeah, just a good teammate. He had a great attitude down in the minor leagues there. So it was nice to get him on and see him and get him to tell some stories, because, man, I was dying. There was some funny stuff there.
He's a funny guy, man. He really is. Yeah.
So big thanks to Jay Rosehill, Tell 2.0.
Yep.
And I think we're ready for the clear questions now.
You know what? I think we're ready for them as well. Clear questions brought to you by our friends at Clear Rum. Baller, what do you got?
This is from Anthony Verasso over on Instagram. This is for both of you. Mm-hmm. Any good stories of back in the day with Richie, Karts, and the Updog?
Ooh. Lots of great stories. I'm not sure if we're able to dig into that darkness.
Yeah. Man, we had a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun.
That's for sure. A lot of fun. Man.
What comes to mind there, Nass?
What comes to mind?
Down the beach.
Yeah, I mean, there was always something going on. Yeah, you know, like Richie's always pretty quiet. Updog was the guy
stirring it up,
and he seemed to be able to attract a lot of attention.
He's good at that
around the boys. You know, he seemed to bring a lot of females over. Mm-hmm. He had that ability.
He did have that ability.
But you know, just having a good time. I mean, unfortunately, some things.
Yeah, I don't even know where to begin, because yeah, I feel like it was one big blur.
It was
one big shaker back
it
then.
It was a lot of fun. It was a bonanza. Everybody Frank said. It seemed to be one weekly.
Yeah.
So, man, I can't think of anything that off the top of my head or anything that we could say without.
Yeah, I mean,
you know. Protecting
during
people.
The season, there was certainly a lot of green lights, and then I'm thinking like the off season, even leading up to training camp, how we landed up down to the beach and different casinos and the shore and all these good places, ripping it up too. So
yeah.
I'm trying to think in a specific story, but seems to be one big mishmash of good times.
Yeah, for sure. Sorry, can't give a better answer. I mean, I could tell you some really good ones, but we can't.
Yeah.
Would be right.
Yeah, right.
This one's from Kevin McLaughlin over on Instagram. Nasty. If the Flyers had beaten Jersey in 2012, do you think you guys would have made it to and won the cup?
Ooh,
that's tough. We were a really young team, but we were flying, man. I mean, the guys were so confident. You know, you beat your rival, your biggest rival, probably, I would say, the Penguins. And then wheels kind of fell off after game one. Danny B snuck one in there on Marty Brodeur. It was kind of a bad goal, but Danny could score goals, man.
Yeah, he can.
And I found a way. And so you go up 1-0. And I don't know if we would have won the cup. That's hard to say because we didn't even get past the second round. But it was fun. It was a fun team. It was so young if you look back at all the – like. You know, Coots was a rookie. He was 18 years old. Like, we had Braden Shen, obviously Simmer. All those guys were new. Matt Reed.
Mm-hmm.
It was a great run. I'm not sure we would have won the cup. I would have to say probably not, but, I mean, God, you never know.
How would you ever know?
You know, your goalie gets super hot.
Well, that's it.
Anybody can win, right? But it was a fun year, that's for sure.
Last one from Chris Mayer and his paid blue check mark over on Twitter.
Chris.
What is your guy's favorite story on chemo?
Ooh, chemo.
Gosh, he was funny.
His little, what is that, little mischievous laugh.
Yes.
He was always up to.
He was always doing something just to get someone
pouring
going.
A little fuel on the fire. I think he was good at getting Hartsy going and drumming up a little chaos and kind of sneaking in the background and laughing about it.
Yeah, he was a great guy, man. He is a great guy.
Yeah.
That laugh, though, like you said, he might be hiding around a corner and you hear something happening and you hear him laughing and he's the one that started. He got someone to do something or say something. But he would play like dumb, like he didn't understand something.
Yeah,
and he would say, and then just to get you going, and then he'd you know, start that little laugh. I loved being around Chemo. He was awesome.
Yeah, I feel like if there was something going on and Chemo was around, he was definitely involved.
Yes,
100%. Even as innocent as he looks. Yeah, yeah. I think he's just kind of like always sneaking around and teeing stuff up, especially if Hartsey was around. And I feel like he was always planning something.
Yes,
plotting
sure.
something and screwing around with guys. But yeah, Chemo's awesome teammate. I loved awesome. Having him around, and certainly loved listening to his little snickering laugh.
I'm still a little shocked Chemo is not coaching.
Yeah, no,
I
right?
thought he might. I thought he might. We had talked about it a few years ago. A coach actually called and asked about him, one of our friends, actually, and he just wasn't ready at the time because yeah. Sammy was still playing or was younger, and his daughters, you know, I think he was waiting for one to get into high school, his youngest. But, you know, I guess he just doesn't want to do it.
Oh, he's also made enough money. He probably can just sit back for a couple more years and
yeah, he could probably do that
observe
as well.
Yep. And see how things play out for him. But,
yeah.
I think when he gets the itch and the call, it'll probably be divine timing, and he'll know when that time is. So
I think he'd be a great coach.
I think so too, you know? for sure. So, well, that's a wrap, Nast.
That's it.
Episode 95 in the books. Can you believe it?
Nope, I can't.
No.
Nope. Creeping not on right Hundo. Now. I know. Creeping on it.
Creeping on it. All right. Well, until next week for episode 96. Be sure to tune in next week, and if you like what you're seeing and hearing, be sure to subscribe on YouTube, give us a like, a follow, and until then, stay safe, knuckleheads.
See ya.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Are you ready for playoff hockey? Well, listen up, because I've got something for you. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now here's the deal. Every playoff game day, you're going to be faced with four questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle. And here's a sneak peek into some of the questions we'll be firing your way. First up, you got to pick the winning team. Simple, right? But there's more. You got to decide if the total for the game is going to go over or under a certain amount, and the strategy doesn't stop there. Next up, you're picking which player is going to light the lamp first, and finally, you got to predict which period in the game is going to be the highest scoring. Will it be a barn burner in the first, a shootout in the second, or a nail biter in the third? That is all up to you. Now let's talk prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. That's right. Treat yourself to some nation gear or even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the round winners, cash money. Cold, hard cash. We're putting real dough in your pockets simply for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. It's game time, folks. Head over to games.dailyfaceoff.com now and prove your puck prowess.